Hello, 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 everybody. Welcome to the Today-ish Show. My name's Danny Love.
And I am James Lee. And today we have a very special guest with us. She is a, she's a lot of things, but
a Renaissance woman.
A Renaissance woman, but I would say first and foremost, she is one of the most fiercest fighters of, or one of the fiercest fighters for small businesses in America. She takes on private equity. She takes on all the bad guys that are trying to ruin America, Tiffany Cianci.
Hello, I'm so excited to be here. I've been like, obviously, I know you both. I've known James forever, but I was so excited when you started this podcast. So I'm very excited to be
welcome to
one of your early guests.
Oh, we're so excited to have you. And I just have to compliment you on your vibrant, beautiful outfit before we get started. I'm obsessed.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I was actually in South Africa about a month and a half ago. And I had seen somebody on TikTok that creates custom clothes from natural fibers and from all small business acquired fabrics. And it's a designer named Sibu. And I went and bought a bunch of skirts, 9 skirts and 4 dresses, and had them custom made for me. I'm a big believer in not supporting fast fashion. I don't need plastic clothing. I really want to wear clothes that will last. And I want clothes made out of things that are made to last. And so you know, I'm sure there's something they use in dyeing things. I don't know where they get the dye from, but I do know that they do it all by hand at the vendor that I went to. And I'm a big fan of buying like used clothing that was made with all natural fibers. Like I buy really old sweaters that were still made with wool, right? Instead of the plastic or polyester. I believe things are made to last. And right now we've created a disposable society that is sort of facilitating monopolization. And I don't think it's normal for us to buy a whole new wardrobe every year and have something get ruined after you wash it 3 times.
I mean, so true.
I don't think that's normal. And I think it's okay for people to not feel like they need to do that.
Absolutely. So getting into everything, I know you have kind of a long road into this and it could be kind of a long story, but for the kind of the quick and dirty, how did you get into fighting private equity and advocating on behalf of small businesses?
The fastest on ramp is that I was a franchise owner of a small business, and that franchise was founder owned and operated. So the family that created the franchise had owned it for 46 years. And during COVID, all of the franchisees were forced to shut down. The business suffered and it found itself susceptible to a hostile takeover by a very dark private equity backed firm called Unleash Brands. And I happened to be the union president or the franchisee association union president when that happened. And the company targeted me to break up the union and sued me. They took me to court over and over and over again and did some really horrifying, unethical things, not just to me, to everyone I love, to everyone around me, to my employees, to people I care about, to other business owners, to anyone that supported me. They even threatened creators, journalists, writers. They threatened to sue the New York Times when they wrote about me. They threatened to sue Washingtonian when they wrote about me.
Sounds less like business and more like gangsters.
That's exactly what it was like. And I got this really hard and fast lesson in what is the darker side of private equity. Because I always
like to
preface, not all private equity is dark, right? Like you just had another guest on that operates in an entirely ethical private equity space, creating as many small businesses as they can and finding them funding where they can't find it. Mm-hmm. There, if your mom gives you money to start a business, that's not dark, that's private equity,
right?
But pirate-like private equity is what we see. That's 90% of the firms
sort
that
of the,
are
I guess the
big
business
in America.
Model for private equity, as I've learned throughout business school and the experience that I had, is that they go and take a business that's running well and then they go in and strip it for cash because they don't need that company to last forever. They just need to last for another 5 to 7 years for them to get all their money back.
It's actually 3 years now.
Wow. Okay. So
it's
then they just leave
years.
The carcass behind. That's why I think private equity, I think nobody has any problem with like investment. It's that the type of investing they do is not good for the overall you know, longevity of the company.
So I like to say that that's pirate equity, and it is certainly the most successful private equity in America right now. But there are rare examples. I talk about them a lot. There's one called Levine Lichtenstein. They are a company that is engaging in what private equity used to do back in the day when Bain Capital saved Domino's before Bain Capital destroyed Toys R Us.
Okay,
when they changed their model. They saved Domino's because they had a 10-year plan, and that meant their franchisees had to be successful for 10 years. So they went in and they rebuilt structure and they rebuilt foundational like promises to the franchisees. They created economies of scale that actually benefited the franchisees. They built a co-op that didn't exploit the franchisees in acquiring their food. And then they started redistributing the savings to the franchisees, and it saved Domino's Pizza. Bain Capital used to be a reinvestment and get it back to IPO type of private equity. That used to be the playbook. And there was still bad guys in there. But then they switched to the strip mining model when they acquired Toys R Us. And that was when laws had changed and they were able to do that. Obama and Clinton had sort of the helm when the laws got really, really bad, but they did it with bipartisan Congresses. They just passed laws that cut all the reins and stopped all the oversight. And all of the models essentially became more and more strip mine-like. Now, that doesn't mean every private equity firm is. Again, Levine Lichtenstein just saved Tropical Smoothie Cafe. The franchisees at Fast Signs love them. They own them. The franchisees at Nothing But Cakes love them. But the problem is that even when you get that rare jewel of a private equity firm, they're only going to hold you for 3 to 7 years max. Most of them, it's 2 to 3 years. And then they have to sell you to someone else.
Mm.
And so I always say that when a small business owner or when a franchise owner is thinking about selling their franchise to private equity, you could have a person sitting across from you, you think, is going to do the most good, going to do everything right. You've seen their success. You've seen their track record. And you're like, I'm leaving my franchisees in good hands. But that's not who you are negotiating with. You're negotiating with the devil they sell it to. And you better assume that the next one is going to be, right? Because right now, Tropical Smoothie was saved. And they loved Levine Lichtenstein. And they just sold them to Blackstone.
Ooh.
Right?
Interesting.
Okay? And that's because that's who would buy it. And they owed a duty to their investors. And they, I'm sure they secured good promises. And I'm sure Levine did everything that they thought they could. But they're now with Blackstone. And Blackstone is very much, they're going to get every dollar back for their investors.
Right.
Right. And they only looked, and I want to dive deeper with you because I think, you know, you mentioned Unleash Brands, right? And I want to give people like a sense of, you know, not only does private equity, like their impact on the business owners themselves, but the community, the patrons of these businesses, it has like a really long kind of downstream effect that people probably don't realize that they have. So, I want you to get a little bit more because like what makes sort of Unleash Brands and the way they do business like really bad for the community?
So Unleash Brands is a company that had this amazing pitch for a business model that actually could have been so amazing and so valuable. They could have been on the up and up and done things the right way and actually created immense value for their investors. Unleash Brands wanted to create an umbrella that is similar to Neighbourly or Driven Brands. These are huge umbrellas that acquire dozens of franchisors and built whole segments of the market economy in a very monopolistic way, okay? Neighbourly acquired all of the home services brands, right? They acquired maid services and dryer vent cleaning services and Mr. Handyman services. And they acquired all of these brands that service your home. And then they created cross-marketing, cross-branding, and they started kicking customers from one to the next. And it benefited everybody. Now, they still do a lot that I don't agree with. But that was what they were trying to emulate. Driven Brands did the same thing for car care. They wanted to be that for children. They said they wanted to service children from cradle to college. Okay. And they were going to acquire all of these brands. And that was the pitch they gave when they came and took over our company. We're going to create these amazing marketing opportunities for you. We're going to make it so that your business is more successful than ever. You're going to be able to cross promote with all of our other companies. And our companies are going to feed customers back to you. And it's going to be this amazing thing. And what
like
they
this big happy family.
Big happy yeah. family. That is what they promised.
Yeah.
They said they started the company in a garage by their bootstraps. It's funny. The CEO never said
is
he did
true?
It.
Is that...
It's funny how they had a garage, a very expensive one. But it's funny how he never mentions that his co-founder was his father and his hundreds of millions of dollars, right? He never mentions that. They quickly took him off all the paperwork once they got all the money, right? But it could have been this amazing thing that also created this amazing value for them because they also would have captured all of the data in the life cycle of the way parents spend from cradle to college. The data alone would have been unbelievably valuable, and he could have just been a good CEO and done it the right way, and he would have made so much money. He took every shortcut imaginable to get money fast. And in the process, what he did was, first it was I'm gonna change all your contracts. Our contracts were good for a decade. Now they're gonna come in and they're gonna give us new contracts that make us pay more for every service we were already guaranteed we were getting at a lower price. And they did that to all the brands they acquired. Then it was, we're going to give you a new document you have to sign, and now you have to start paying for call center services. Talk about the 90s. Nobody wants a call center. People want to talk to human beings about 100%. Their children. Okay? But we were going to have to pay for that, so he had a new revenue stream for his private equity investors. It was another revenue stream. Then it was, you're going to have to start offering memberships that go X amount of days. Parents don't want that in children's sports, or they at least want opportunities, and we were going to pay fees on top of that. So here's another revenue stream and another revenue stream for his investors. But that's not all that he did. He also said, you're going to start hiring 14-year-olds to handle four-month-old babies.
What?
And then at the urban air parks that they owned, they were going to hire 14-year-olds to make sure children were safe on zip lines.
How is that even legal?
Well, it was the recommendation we received. In many states you can do it. He wanted us hiring 14-year-olds because it has lower minimum wage in most states, and we could pay them less. And
so just so everybody knows, what are these brands that you're talking about? Just because I want to put we need to identify who the CEO is, what brands is he managing, so people are aware of what's going on here.
So the CEO is Michael O. Browning Jr. His chief legal officer and co-owner is Stephen Polizzola. He never likes to tell anyone he owns a huge percentage of the company, but he does. He gets to keep his name out of it so that Michael Browning takes all the heat. But Stephen Polizzola, their chief legal officer, I think he's their former chief legal officer now, owned a large percentage of the company. He took that, I think, in exchange instead of money early on. The company that backs them, the private equity firm that owns the controlling interest, is Seidler Private Equity. They own the Padres.
Oh my God.
And a whole bunch
of... James has to get a new floppy head.
And they are based here in San Diego. And they also own a bunch of other family brands. They own Rawlings Sports, right? They own Quick Quack Car Washes. They own Aiden and Aeneas Muslim Baby Swaddles. They own Frida, the baby healthcare company. They own Upa Baby Strollers. So they acquired Unleashed probably thinking, this is going to be amazing. We're going to have all this cross promotion, not realizing they were buying, evil. I don't know. Hopefully they were good guys that bought an evil company, but they haven't done anything to stop them.
Right.
And so Unleashed Brands owns... They acquired in several instances by force Snapology, which was like a children's Lego and robotics company that was mostly run by my moms. The franchisees were all moms that did this in their spare time, taking their little kits of robotics to schools and doing after school programs. It was really great for moms. And they immediately told them, no, you need to get hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans and go buy a building. First of all, nobody wanted that. So none of those are being successful right now. Like almost all of them are failing. They didn't have like a proof of concept for that, but they insisted they do it. So they forced out a lot of the small franchisees. They acquired XP League, which was a youth e-sporting league, which is the opposite of the Little Gym, which says kids don't belong on screens. They belong in the gym, right? They acquired the Little Gym, which was our franchise. They owned Urban Air, which is a giant indoor adventure park that has really dangerous attractions in it. It's got zip lines that are 35 feet up in the air over concrete floors and metal fences, right?
What?
It's got that literally, like, that children get to ride. It's got tree trekking, like, models across the ceiling. It's got multi-level go-karts that go 25 miles an hour that don't have a minimum age to drive them. Sounds it's got trampolines. It all sounds so exciting, yeah. Right? Well, so as an example, my son received, even though everybody knows I've been in court with these guys for 5 years, which your followers may not know, I've been in court with them for almost five years. One of my son's friends from school planned a party at Urban Air. And this weekend they saw a really horrifying news article that a six-year-old girl died at an Urban Air in Florida.
Oh my gosh.
They just messaged us to ask if they could move their party somewhere and if I had any recommendations for them because they don't want to take kids there anymore. She was riding in a go-kart. She was only six. These go-karts go up to 25 miles an hour. And she got hit by another go-kart, and it was enough in whatever way the trauma took place. She was airlifted out and died shortly thereafter.
That is so sad.
But this is one of dozens of severe injuries that I'm testifying in a bunch of the cases on right now because they've cut costs in all of these businesses.
Well, there's also another like side part of the story that you sort of educated me on is that when you go to these places, you're required to sign an arbitration clause, meaning that you actually can't go take them to like regular court if something happens to you or your child.
Well, yeah, I was saying that last night when we were all at dinner that, you know, you go to these places and you basically sign a waiver that signs all your rights away, right?
Yeah. So
it's crazy.
If you take your kid to a birthday party, you shouldn't need a lawyer. I'm a big advocate for this, okay? There are things in life you should not need a lawyer to go rent a storage unit. You shouldn't need a lawyer to go take your kid to urgent care. You shouldn't need a lawyer to take your dog to the vet. But in all of these instances right now, we have these private equity-owned brands and big corporation-owned brands. This is not unique to private equity, that have found a way to exploit the secret court system that exists in America, where you sign the terms and conditions on an app on your phone, not realizing you're forfeiting your constitutional right to a jury trial. And they're overriding it with what they say is freedom of contract, but you don't even realize you've created a contract. There was no meeting of the minds. There was no negotiation. There was no offer and acceptance. You just tried to sign your kid in at a birthday party.
Right. And what parent has time to go like this and like read 50 pages? You just go to the bottom, you sign.
But even if you read it, if you the other option would be, well, I guess my child is not going to participate in this birthday party. They're probably not going to understand what's going on. Why can't I go play with my friends? And now you're dealing with
this situation. Now there's the pressure of your kid being ostracized for not being there. So these companies, and we can tangent all day and I'll talk about anything we want to talk about, but arbitration is a secret court system that exists in the United States. 1.6 million people are forced into forced arbitration every year for everything from you got fired because you wanted to go take a breast pumping break and you're forced into arbitration now, to you tried to buy a Taylor Swift ticket and there was collusion across all other brands and you want to sue Ticketmaster now, to I ordered a pizza on Uber Eats and then I got hit in an Uber car 2 years later and now I'm being forced into a forced arbitration because I bought a pizza 2 years ago now. Those are all real case studies that are happening right now.
That Disney case last year that I talked about where somebody signed up for Disney Plus and then they went to a Disney resort or theme park and they died. And then they said, well, because you signed up for Disney Plus, there was an arbitration clause in there. So now you can't sue Disney.
It's actually worse than that. They never signed up for Disney Plus. They did the 2 week trial.
Ooh.
And never signed up.
And those are, I mean, for people, I was trying to make this point. Those are uniquely different experiences.
Yeah.
Like signing up for a subscription service to watch TV streaming is not the same as going to a theme park where there's other dangers involved.
Yeah, it's insane. I was going to say, can you explain the breast pump situation?
So right now in America, every single American that has a phone in your hand has signed dozens of franchise we're talking about both arbitration agreements, okay?
Yeah.
But if you signed it at work, 56% of all employees in the United States, their employer has given them with their paperwork when you're signing in your new job, there's an arbitration agreement buried in there. So if you get discriminated against or harassed,
you cannot sue.
You can't sue in court. You can only sue in these secret courtrooms. And this secret court system is really nefarious because it's a monopoly. 97% of all of the cases are overseen by a monopoly called the American Arbitration Association. And the American Arbitration Association is made by lawyers for lawyers. And all of the money that pours into there comes from corporations paying for judges. And these judges are lawyers that might have regular day jobs. They might have been real judges. They might have been, you don't even have to be a lawyer technically to be an arbitrator. But these lawyers get to charge whatever they want to be the arbitrator of your case. And the reason people said they did it is because it was supposed to be cheaper and faster than the court system. That's the pitch they made to Congress. Sounds good, except it costs more than court. And in 97% of cases, the corporation wins. Now, if you were to go to court and a lawyer took your case, say a lawyer said you got fired for wanting to take a breast pumping break, which you're legally entitled to do. Okay. And you got fired and you had proof you got fired and a lawyer took that case. If a lawyer believed that they could take that case on contingency, you'd have about a 55% chance of winning in court and about a 70% chance of securing a settlement. Okay.
So are there any state laws that override some of these contracts? No.
This is a federal law. It overarches all state laws.
Wow.
Okay. But let's say that happened and you had a 5% chance of winning in court and you had a 70% chance of getting a settlement. In arbitration, you have a 3% chance of winning. 3%. This does not benefit any American, because even if you were part of that 3%, statistically, you're going to get 1/10 of what you would have gotten in court. This only benefits corporations. It's a secret court system that is being used to control the lack of free market. It hides bad conduct by corporations and by private equity firms, by employers. In a really horrible instance that also has proven we can fix this, Massage Envy was a franchisor that operated out of the same state that my franchisor operated out of, Arizona. Most franchises and most companies choose to house their law for this purpose in Texas and Arizona. X notoriously just added an arbitration agreement to their terms and conditions.
Uh-oh.
And they moved the Forum of Contract Law to Bedford, Texas, which is the same home base as Unleashed Brands. Right? And Neighborly.
Is that a coincidence or is that...
No. They choose that because the monopoly there, the laws are very strong for the corporation. They don't protect people. And it's a very small pool of judges that they control.
Right. Because in these arbitration clauses or arbitration courts, from my understanding, you don't get like any kind of transparency into who's like, adjudicating the case. They're not like actual judges, right? These are just...
There could be a real judge in there.
There could be one.
Sometimes they're just lawyers. It can be anybody. And then you rank your, you each get to strike a couple. So you get a pool of 12. Let's say you get a pool of 12 judges sent to you, okay?
Yeah.
Generally, and every contract is a little different in how you guys choose. But as an example, if they send you a pool of 12 judges, you get to strike three, they get to strike three. They're going to strike the three cheapest ones. So you have to spend more. You're going to strike the three most expensive ones. That's another thing
too. You're paying for the judges.
Yeah, my judge was over $25,000 a week.
Which is kind of...
And my case took a year.
So then in regular court, you don't pay for the judge.
No, you're guaranteed a right to a judge for free.
And here you're paying not only for your own lawyer, you're paying for the judge as well.
Yes. It's way more expensive. But they're paying the judges over and over and over again. So every judge knows that the big law firms that are representing the corporations have what's called a strike list team. And they have an entire area, like the lawyers I was against are DLA Piper. And they have an entire division dedicated to tracking arbitrators and to knowing who they can count on so they know who to strike. But more than that, the arbitrators know that if they end up on a strike list for a corporation, then their repeat business dries up. They're going to see me once. They're going to see them 100 times. So they have to rule for them. The impotence, they lose their retirement plan. Okay, because judges who were judges, let's just take the judges. They might have been great judges. They spent their whole lives working as a civil servant. And as a civil servant, they made $135,000 a year while their other friends that came out of law school with them were making $450,000 a year. So they work for 20 years as a judge and they retire to the American Arbitration Association. They have to catch up at 25 grand a week to what everybody else made. But they learn very quickly, and there are entire training programs about this. I've actually gotten, like, people have sent me, like, clips they've recorded at, like, conferences and stuff, where they say, but yeah, but you have to choose for the corporation or you're going to be on their strike list, and then you're out of business in a month. You're going to be let go. So you have to choose for the corporation. That's, like, there's no way to say that it is fair and just when 97% of decisions are for corporations, when it would be 50-50 in a court. Or 55-45 in your favor in a court, or 70-30 in your leverage enforcing a settlement. Okay. But that is how it works in arbitration. And the American Arbitration Association, what's worse is that when they wrote the law, they gave extreme latitude to the arbitrators so that they don't have to follow laws. They can make up whatever law they want to support their ruling. It can be rational, it can be irrational. It does not matter. They can make up whatever laws they want, whatever rules they want. They don't have to rely on law. They can say, I just don't think this is fair, and corporate wins, right? And so when you're dealing with a circumstance that was built so abused, so like obviously ripe for abuse and monopoly and cartel-like behavior, that's what you're going to get.
And that's not illegal. I feel like a lot of people would listen to that. You just said arbitrators don't have to follow the law.
Correct.
So then how is that legal? You know what I mean? Like,
because the law gave them permission to not follow the law. It was literally written into the Federal Arbitration Act that they can rely on whatever reasoning they want. And this is one thing that I'm advocating for. I want people to start going out in referendum states and passing state laws that say arbitrations that are overseen by the jurisdiction of that state have to at least follow the law. Just that would be enough to change the system. It wouldn't change it entirely, but you should have an appellate process when the law is ignored. You should be entitled to protection under the law. And we could fix that with a single sentence bill.
Okay, so you can do, let's say like in California, we have the ballot initiative. So you can actually put something on there that I guess that wouldn't conflict with the Federal the Federal Arbitration Act of 1933 or whatever when it was passed.
So each contract gets to choose the form of law clause. So most of them are choosing Bedford, Texas, and Arizona. Right? Arizona is a referendum state, by the way.
Yeah. Like,
Arizona is a referendum state. Arizona is a referendum state. Fourth wall break. If the voters of Arizona found out that this exploitation was happening. There's actually what's called Arbitration Corner in Arizona, which is 24th and Camelback, where you have the arbitrators' buildings on one side and all of the largest law firms on the other side of the street. And they have bridges built over and under the street so they can all hang out and have lunch together.
Whoa. They don't have to ever go outside? Is that what's...
They can literally, like, no, they can go outside and walk under.
It's probably very nice. It's probably open
air.
It's
very fancy, and they all spend time together. I just know that area. It's nice. Right?
Really?
Very Camelback? Fancy. And so what I'm saying is, in a referendum state, you could pass a law that any company that places their forum of law as the state of Arizona, any arbitration that took place under that forum of law had to follow the law. That's
why,
it.
Why wouldn't we? That would be enough. Why haven't we done that?
Because nobody knows it's happening. No one knows no these one cases knows
it
are happening.
Unless it happens to you, right?
Wait, well, so all arbitrations come with a confidentiality requirement. So 1.6 million Americans are getting abused by this system every year, and they can't tell anyone. They can't talk to the press. They can't talk to you. So they can't talk to educators.
How are you able to be a spokesperson?
So one, I won a defamation case for what happened in mine, and I get to clear my name. They defamed me. And I get to tell everybody about it. I get to clear my name.
Okay.
They lied about me in writing to lots and lots of people. Okay.
In public.
So I get to tell people that that's not true. All right. They accused me of horrifying things. And I won that case. But alternatively, they also probably made a mistake in filing several times in court and attaching all of the documents to it. So I was one of the earlier arbitrations. They made that mistake, and I don't think they'd do it again. But they filed in court, and that means that most of what I talk about is public record.
Got it. Okay.
But that doesn't happen very often.
So we just had someone on, and we were talking about AI, for example.
Yeah.
Do you think that might be a way, now that there's more visibility to this issue, where the new mom going back to work, or women that are looking for jobs in the corporate world, before they're signing their contracts, that AI might be able to be like, warning, pay attention to this? Or, you know, how can regular people, because we know laws take forever to pass and implement, how can people right now start to protect themselves from being in a really sticky, bad situation that they only have 3%
honestly
of winning?
Like, it's very hard to say, but like, you're going to lose the job if you don't sign it. So it doesn't matter. Right. Which makes it a contract of adhesion. They're going to say you can go find another job. And that's their argument. You have a choice. Just don't work here. So the problem is that you're in it from that moment. That this has become so corrupted. It has become so unequal. It has become so clearly in favor of corporations and so clearly to the abuse of people. And it's hidden bad conduct by corporations consistently. It's contributed more, in my opinion, the arbitration cartel in America and its exploitation has contributed more to the loss of the free market than almost anything else. And it's right up there with monopolies who rely on it to allow the consolidation, right? Because it used to be, let's go back to Urban Air for a minute and the little girl that died this weekend. Okay, she's one of dozens of kids that have been permanently, horrifyingly maimed in these parks, okay? There's a little girl in Ahwatukee, Arizona, who fell off their zip line because they didn't check her harness. And she, you know, broke all these bones and got permanent brain damage. It's 6 years later now. She's going blind from those injuries, right? Like, just horrifying, all right? There's another girl in Sugar Land, Texas, who was 14 and climbing up their 20-foot rock wall, and they didn't attach it to the slowdown mechanism. And she jumped off that rock wall and broke every bone in her lower body. She hit the ground with full force and weight of a 20-foot drop, okay? And as soon as these injuries happen in these parks, they're approached immediately and said, you signed this, you signed this, you can't talk to anybody. You can't talk to the press, you can't talk to these people. If this had happened in 1995 and arbitration were not pervasive, okay, what would happen is with each injury, public pressure to change their behavior would mount. Boycotts would happen. Local and regional politicians would be outside on picket lines with us saying, protect our kids, okay? But because they're able to force these families immediately into these secret arbitrations, no one knows. Nobody is able to talk. They're not able to tell their story. And so it hides bad conduct and the free market no longer responds. And that means that their value goes up while their practices go down. It's a reinforcing sort of just devil's bargain, right? It's like the match made in hell. And I really don't know a better way to explain it. When you have a company that sees they can get away with something once, and then they push it a little further and they get away with it again and they push it a little further. There is no incentive whatsoever to change their behavior because the market no longer responds. It is not just Unleash Brands. It is not just Urban Air. It is not just Ticketmaster, right? The average family of four has signed between 260 and 1,300 arbitration agreements. Whoa. Right now. Your household, if you have a couple kids, every time you sign up for youth sports, every time you take your kid to the pediatrician, go to the orthodontist, right? Anything that's been acquired by these big companies. Now, small orthodontists, go find your independent offices. Go start spending with
independent brands.
So that
would be a way, right? Where yes. people could, it's supporting small business.
Yeah. I talk a lot about how private equity has acquired all storage companies, and they have. Including Extra Space, I believe. But Extra Space is the only storage company that has an opt-out for their arbitration agreement.
Okay.
So guess where I tell people to spend their money? Extra Space.
Got it.
You know, they're not close to me, like, but I found out about that. Someone sent me that. So I tell people, make good choices, right? Choose better for your family.
And try to work for privately owned
Strike
businesses.
Strike it on a contract and send it back and see if they catch it. Start striking it. Somebody hands you something, scratch that part out, initial next to it, and hand it back.
Okay.
If they still treat you.
Yeah,
do
right.
It.
You could, because I did ask about if you're in the hospital or whatever. And I said, if I don't check this box off, are they still going to, you know,
they'll try.
Do it. And sometimes they say yes, sometimes they say no.
But my husband is the king of scratching things nothing, out, right? Initialing it, and handing
could
it back.
Could you just say nothing? Because, like, let's say you're signing a contract, you just X that part out and they don't check and it goes through and then.
Then you would have grounds.
Okay, so that's
because
of gorilla,
you engaged in a meeting of the minds.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, something sort of that people should know.
It doesn't
yeah.
work on click wrap terms and conditions, though. It doesn't work
paper.
On.
So, yeah, you have to ask for, hey, I want to sign this in paper, too.
Yeah, we had started to talk about that really horrible franchisor. They're called Massage Envy in Arizona.
Oh, right. So what happened there?
If you don't know what Massage Envy is, it's the largest massage chain.
Oh,
I've
been to Massage Envy.
Okay, so.
I don't need to talk the whole massage. That alone was bad enough.
When you go in, you sign in and you click their terms and conditions
or you
download their app. Yeah. It had a forced arbitration and confidentiality agreement
wow.
on it.
Wow.
181 people, including a few men, were raped or sexually assaulted in their facilities. Mm. You don't know that, right? You're looking at me like, that didn't happen. I know about
this. No, I'm looking
at
you like, no, I can see that.
Yeah. So this happened, and all of the women and the men were forced into secret arbitrations, and they couldn't tell anybody what happened to them. And what happened was three brave women broke ranks and went to USA Today, went to the Washington Post, and it created rage that women were being forced into arbitrations after they'd been raped, okay? And a unanimous law was passed just a couple months later in the House and the Senate that amended the Federal Arbitration Act to say you could no longer forcibly force any person into an arbitration when it's in a case of sexual assault or harassment. That happened so quickly because the outrage was so great. Well, that should be happening for these kids. We should be changing this right now. You shouldn't be able to agree to something when you never get a chance to read it, and you certainly couldn't understand it without a lawyer present, okay? These children should not be forced into secret arbitrations when they're falling 35 feet and becoming paraplegics.
Right.
Right? That shouldn't happen. A mom getting internally decapitated at her kid's birthday party, swinging around an Illinois Urban Air, like a ceiling fan, like that she's hanging off of, right? She shouldn't be forced into a secret arbitration. She should be able to tell the world what happened to her.
So that it doesn't happen to anybody else.
Yes. There is a public good, a public interest in restoring the free market. And if you are a capitalist and you say that you think you should be able to exploit this, you're not a capitalist, you're a cronyist. Okay, any business leader, and all of them, including Trump, use these on their properties, okay? Like, it's a problem across all party lines, all business types.
Yeah, because as a business owner, you're like, okay, I'm going to save the face of my business.
Yep.
Right. I'm going to save costs and legal fees, potentially, right?
Yeah.
So I would imagine that most businesses would do it. Maybe they don't even realize. Maybe that some of them have good
intent.
Maybe
they believe the alternative dispute resolution is fair, but it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
And so if you are a capitalist, if you are a free market capitalist, and a lot of people are like, libertarians would love this. Well, actually, libertarians hate laws. They don't want us to create rules that govern businesses. However, every single libertarian that I've been able to sit down with and show how it's clouding the free market has changed their position on this issue. Every single one. And I've gotten several to cross and vote with me on issues. So, like, you have to understand that if you believe in the free market, we don't have a free market right now. We have a crony, capitalist, monopolized, consolidated market. And private equity is just one very disgusting symptom of this very pervasive problem. And that is because we are failing to keep the free market in check. We are failing to keep capitalism in check. We are failing. Our regulators are failing in their duties to do so. And we are failing to recognize the symptoms and act as people in demanding this. But that's because we don't hear about it. And that's not good. There is a public interest. There is a public good in knowing when companies harm citizens. Okay. We all, like, everybody's seen the movie The Big Short. Everybody's seen, or if you haven't, you should watch it. If you haven't seen the movie Darkwater. I think it's Darkwater. It's about DuPont poisoning tons of farmers in like Kentucky and West Virginia and poisoning all of us with forever chemicals.
Is that the
and
same?
Hiding it?
Or Aaron DuPont's. Brockovich, is that another sort of situation?
Aaron Brockovich was actually arbitration. Now that's back when arbitration was more fair, and that movie actually advocated for arbitration back then. That's actually how they got the
pro-arbitration propaganda right there.
Well, no, back then it did its job. Yeah. It has been corrupted as it's been consolidated, like everything. Back then there were lots of arbitration companies that had to fight for people's business, and they had to demonstrate that their arbitrators were fair, and it has become monopolized over time and consolidated, and it has become the arm of corruption for these corporations that pay them over and over again.
So then what's the most effective way to fight back? Because that's what you do day in and day out. So what are some things that you found, wow, this is really working? How do I get people of different ideologies, right, on both the right, left, Republican, Democrat, to kind of get on board with the issues that you think matter the most in terms of protecting
I don't think Americans. I've ever talked to anybody about any of these issues and had anybody right or left tell me I'm wrong because they're right or left, okay?
Right.
I don't think that. I think that these are cross-partisan, deeply unpartisan issues. We should care about small businesses that are being put out of business by monopolies. We should care about the fact that children or adults or us are being harmed by this conduct. We should care that people are losing their right, their constitutional right to a jury trial. We should care that we don't know that children are dying in our communities. We should care about that. We should care that people in nursing homes that are being abused or killed are being hidden in secret arbitrations. We should care about that. And so, but people don't know because the confidentiality agreements make it so they can never find out. So I'm here to let everyone know, and you can't say you don't know after today. So like right now, it's not easy. One, strike out clauses where you can. Two, negotiate clauses where you can. Three, don't sign click wrap things if you can avoid it. Go in and try to sign up for things in person, get paper contracts, negotiate. It's not going to work most of the time. It's not going to work for your iPhone. It's not going to work when you buy something on Ticketmaster. It's not going to work when you buy a plane ticket. Okay, it's just not. And that means that we have to start demanding more.
When you buy a plane ticket, is there an arbitration clause?
Yep.
Really?
So absolutely.
Like if a plane crashes?
Or absolutely. Whatever?
Except, I mean, you can't obviously avoid the public backlash if a plane crashes, but
so you're but saying, they very quickly so quiet like the entire like pool of victims.
So they can't sue the airline if it was like some kind of maintenance negligence or whatever it is?
I mean, they can go to arbitration.
Whoa, that's not ideal.
No, it's not.
And then how do you start, like, because you were telling me the story about, you know, your personal case and how you had, you basically, like, you did your thing, you convinced whoever you needed to convince, and then somebody makes a call in the background and they come in and then they like thwart the process. I don't know all the details, but how do you stop that from happening where like somebody comes, I think in your case, right, you had convinced everybody and then some dude gets paid off and then comes
convinced in. Everybody what? To be so, bought out?
Explain the details.
I mean, there's so many different places that could be true in my case, but yeah. I'm going to assume you mean that like...
I think it was like in Arizona or something like that you were talking.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so we wrote a law. We wrote a law, HB 2404, I think it was 2404, where we brought a law that was to protect franchisees from being forced into arbitrations when the federal law was broken. We wanted to give a private right of action that if the federal law was broken in selling them a franchise and that the franchisor did not follow the federal franchise laws that are governed by the FTC, that those franchisees never would have signed that contract. If they were misled, if they were defrauded, they should be right to bring that case in court because they didn't sign that arbitration agreement on good faith. They were presented with lies, okay? And so we wrote a law that was to protect small businesses from forced arbitration in instances of fraud, okay? And we brought the case and I got to Arizona and I was told it was dead on arrival. I was told that this law is dead. The IFA has already been here. That's the International Franchise or association. It's actually a franchise association, but they only serve franchisors. And they brought FranPAC and money and started telling people not to support it. And I went office to office to every member of the legislature. And secretly, 9 members of the Republican-led legislature, all Republicans, had been hurt by franchisors. Nine of them had been franchisees that were hurt by franchisors. And they would secretly tell me, this happened to me too. And I'd be like, why aren't you standing next to me? And they're like, if I want to get reelected, I have to look like I'm successful. I can't tell people I got defrauded this way. I'm a lawyer. This shouldn't have happened to me. And the president of the Senate was also a franchisee that had just gotten really screwed over by a franchise acquisition by a private equity firm. And the Republican Senate president, Steve Kaiser. Okay. And so I went door to door to every office and I worked hard. Okay. And we got the signatures we needed to, one, get it to the Commerce Committee. So they let me go to the Commerce Committee. The night we got there to the Commerce Committee to pass this law, they told me it was DOA. They pulled us out in the hallway and the chairperson of the committee said, listen, you're going to be embarrassed in here. They're all going to vote no. You cannot come in here and do this. You cannot. Let's push it. Let's reduce the language. We'll bring it back next term, blah, blah, blah. And I said, if they're going to say no, they're going to say it after I tell them what happened to me.
And we
brought 50 small business owners that all backed this. Nobody came out opposed to it. Zero people logged opposition. So I went in and I testified. It was on Valentine's Day, 2 years ago. It was on Valentine's Day and they wanted to go home. So everybody only got 90 seconds to speak. They let me go for 24 minutes, okay? Because I led with the fact that during my arbitration, I was forced to have an abortion against my will. I told them they don't understand what's happening to people in these arbitrations. They don't have to follow the law. They don't have to follow the rules. Horrifying things are happening. And that's going to be like a whole rabbit hole. I don't want to but anybody can look that up on my channel and see what happened there. But I told them, I said, this is happening to small businesses and they're using Arizona law to do it. They're hurting people, bastardizing the laws you passed. They're hurting your small business owners. And they're all sitting here watching you. And I'm like, they asked me a lot of questions. They're like, this is happening in Arizona? I'm like, yeah, it's literally a whole cartel up at 24th and Camelback. And they're like, "What? Well, where was your case? And I said, well, my business was in Maryland and my corporate office is in Texas and the financiers are in California. And they're like, then why are you here? Why was your court case here? I said, because they put their forum of contract law here because you don't protect people and they choose you. And they're like, I'm sorry. You're in Maryland, they're in California, the home office is in Texas, but they use our law to hurt people? Yes, that's correct. Then I showed them a bunch of documents that showed they were defrauding people, and they asked me a bunch of questions, and the libertarian on their committee, told me, he's like, Deary, I'm never voting for this. I don't believe in passing regulations. He was my first yes vote.
Oh, wow.
Everybody except the former lapdog of Governor Doug Ducey, who was the CEO of Kahala Brands when they sued all of their franchisees.
I just talked about Kahala Brands.
Kahala Brands was owned by Governor Doug Ducey, or he was the CEO of Kahala Brands, a private equity firm that acquired a bunch of businesses that was the most litigious private equity firm against their franchisees. So everybody but his lapdog, Matt Gress, voted yes with us. So then we moved to the House. We passed Rules Committee unanimously. We were headed. We had the signatures. We had everything we needed to pass this law. And the night before it was set to the floor vote, the American Legislative Exchange Council sent in a letter to every Republican in the legislature that said that if they backed us, they would face primary opposition. American Legislative Exchange Council is the dark money arm of the Koch brothers. And they write laws that they test in states and then they pervasively expand them to control things all across the United States and then bring it to the federal government. It's how they've been able to pass a lot of agendas that are really harmful to small businesses and very pro-consolidation and monopoly. All right. And they love arbitration. They love it. And everybody withdrew their support because they couldn't. First of all, ALEC has never threatened anyone in Arizona because it's been such a reliably red state for them. They've never had to do that. And that night they did. They denounced me and they told them that they would face primary opposition if they didn't withdraw their support immediately. And it died that day. And that was after they brought the CEO of the IFA, the International Franchise Association Lobbying Group, brought the CEO or vice, the second in command at McDonald's out to denounce the legislation. Even though all the McDonald's owners had come with us that night to support it, they were all there. They testified. Now, here's another fun fact. BrandPAC, their private equity funded PAC that pays all these politicians off, that also came. They, I'm sure, had nothing to do with this. But the day after all of us testified on behalf of the bill, every single franchisee that was there were speaking from member organizations of the IFA. every one of them was retaliated against within 2 weeks.
Wow.
In what way?
There were lots of ways. One of the bravest women that spoke, she was a very well-respected franchisee, 49 years of success in her brand. And she got a phone call from like the CEO, said, if you do it again, your children will never inherit your businesses that you've built for 50 years. We will cut them off and they'll own nothing. The Subway owners that came were given surprise audits that week of all their finances, all their facilities, and they were forced to buy a bunch of stuff to bring them up to new standards through like management. All of the Little Gym owners that came and testified that day were given surprise visits and audits as well. Several of the franchisees that came received threatening communications saying that they would not be renewed at their next term.
So with franchise owners,
yeah,
not all of them are owned by private equity.
Nope, but about 76% have some private equity involvement now. Franchisees are small businesses mostly.
Right.
But franchisors are all being acquired by private equity.
So how would a regular consumer know if they're supporting a small business or private equity?
Go to your mom and pop stores. Stop going to big intellectual property businesses.
But I feel like that should be an app or something.
It's funny you say that.
Yeah, I think that's...
I'll have to save that for next visit. It's funny you say that. We'll save that for another visit. Okay. We will save that for another visit.
But I think, okay, so I always get a little choked up when I talk to you, because that story is horrifying, by the way, just all the details that you talk about. So in general, like, would you say that people shouldn't, like, if you're thinking about starting a small business, you probably just shouldn't go down the franchising route?
I'm going to strongly... So for the first time in American history, because of the way that private equity has become so pervasive in franchising and the way that they're exploiting franchisees, it used to be that a franchisee would just pay royalties to the brand and that was enough. And successful franchisees paid successful amounts of royalties and the franchisor made money and everyone was happy. Mm-hmm. But that's not how franchises operate anymore. For most franchises, the way it works now is that the corporate office, instead of passing along the savings they could, right? Like, let's say that you are... a burger chain, okay? You can leverage huge buying contracts for potatoes so that your franchisees get the best deal on French fries in the business.
Like you become the Costco of the, right, type of a
you
thing.
You get leverage your buying power for the benefit of franchisees. They're successful. They pay you more royalties. That was the winning model for decades and decades and decades. But Quiznos actually sort of started the depletion of that. So Quiznos...
Toasties.
Yeah, Quiznos
R.I.P., man.
Overexpanded. And got very greedy. And they created a system where they started mandating who their franchisees could buy with. And instead of negotiating the best deal through those vendors, they would actually inflate the price with the vendors and the vendor would kick them back the difference. And that started being something called rebate revenue. And Quiznos went bankrupt after their rebate revenue exceeded their royalty revenue. So they were making more screwing their franchisees and customers than they were in royalties because their franchisees were like successful. That's what all of them are doing now with few exceptions.
Like Domino's isn't doing,
yes. It is a Red Lobster situation.
Buy and shrimp that was super expensive,
yes,
or whatever.
But you were saying like Domino's is the exception. What are some other exceptions?
Well, so Domino's I think is publicly traded now.
Yeah.
But they actually have a co-op that shares all the cost savings of their food acquisition in checks back to their franchisees. That was created when Bain Capital was trying to save them, right?
Yeah.
But there aren't very many exceptions, and the problem is that most of them are being acquired. Five Guys is a franchise that I wholeheartedly support.
Okay.
Five Guys is a franchise that has refused to sell to private equity. I was supporting Jersey Mike's. We sure tried.
You did a viral post about Five Guys.
I did. 7 million views last week.
So
wow.
Why do you support Five Guys?
Because their family won't sell it to private equity. They have two generations, almost three generations now, that have committed to keeping it family.
So
owned.
I'm guessing, and I'm... Because
it is
wrong.
Expensive.
Yeah. It is expensive. But they also
have
open kitchens and they have quality ingredients and you can see the food they're making in front of you. Mm. There's a lot of things that went into keeping it expensive.
So
right? They haven't like overexpanded. In-N-Out
be another one?
In-N-Out is not a franchise. They're all corporate owned. I love In-N-Out.
Yeah.
And they use quality ingredients and it is family owned and I fully support In-N-Out.
Okay.
But they are not a franchise.
They're not a franchise.
Nope. You can't buy an In-N-Out.
Right.
Yeah.
They have like a program where if you're a manager, you kind of become like a... They
like
pay
a
you
partner.
Well. Yeah, partner.
To be a
okay,
partner,
got
but
it.
Cannot buy an
So
In-N-Out.
Five Guys, do we have any other good ones?
We had Jersey Mike's and we lost them to Blackstone. We fought, like my first show I ever did with James, we had actually created SaveJerseyMikes.com. We had this whole effort to save Jersey Mike's and they sold to Blackstone.
I used to love the Big Kahuna. Anyways,
Go to mom and pop shops.
Yes, go to mom and
whatever
pop shops.
Whatever you can buy from a franchise, you can buy from a mom and pop shop.
I mean,
it's the best thing we can
do. Right? Like,
where'd you get that matcha to this morning?
Well, I'm out of my hometown, but like,
is that Einstein's over there?
Yeah.
Okay, I think they're owned by JAB Holdings. So JAB Holdings at one time owned Einstein.
I had a flat tire today. I didn't have time.
So JAB Holdings is a really good example because these companies all have skeletons, right? JAB Holdings is a brand that owns Krispy Kreme, Panera. I believe they own the Einstein's Brothers still. They may not. I don't want to put my foot in my mouth there. They own Dr. Pepper. They owned all Keurig brands and Green Mountain Coffees.
Okay.
They owned Insomnia Cookies. They owned a whole bunch of things, okay? And they also happen to have secured all of their family's wealth from the exploitation of concentration camp labor during the Holocaust.
Mm. Whoa.
That's where they got, like, literally, like, 70% of everything they have came from forced labor. And then they turned that into a private equity fund that has grown and grown and grown and grown and grown to where it is today. They're very exploitative as a company. They are not kind to their franchisees. They have horrifying, like satisfaction rates. And I don't know if they still own Einstein's, but I do know that they own Panera.
So if you're a franchisee, and you had experience with this, and you find out about your company being sold off to private equity or whatever, are you able to just say,
list
you know
it
what,
for
I don't
sale
want
today.
This. Yeah, I don't, it's like, I don't want this. Are you
list
able
it
to
for
get
sale
out?
Today, but it's probably too late. It's probably too late, but you should list it for sale today.
Oh, you should list the franchise for sale today.
Like, you're running a Subway, whatever. You're like, this sucks.
Well, look
for
at
me.
Subway. Subway just got bought by Rourke Capital, which is one of the largest monopoly franchisors. And they own all, aside from Jersey Mike's, they own almost every deli brand, right? They own Jimmy John's and they own McAllister's Deli and they own Arby's sandwich shops, right? And they own a whole bunch of and Subway.
Burger King.
Right? No, that's Yum Brands. Burger King is Yum Brands.
I don't want to create, but I think Burger King.
Did they get sold over there? They might have.
Yum Brands is like KFC and
it used to be
whatever the other ones. I think I'm pretty sure Rourke Capital is Burger or Burger King is working.
They also own Baskin Robbins, Dunkin' Donuts. They own a lot, okay? And they acquired Subway for like $9 billion. They immediately told all their franchisees they had to add new slicing machines that they put rebate revenue on. Now, their franchisees already were only making an average of $26,000 a year. And they were already the number one. It was so bad. It's so bad. Like, Subway franchisees make no money. Like, they're drowning. And they also have the highest default rate on SBA loans in the United States.
You might make more as a Subway sandwich person than, like, making the sandwiches as a low-level employee.
That is a fact.
Wow.
In many Subway, but the thing is, they have the highest default rate of all franchise small businesses in the United States. More of their franchisees fail than any other company, right? And so when you're looking at, and this is why I say mom and pop shops are better. It used to be that franchising was the American dream superhighway, right? You were buying into good intellectual property. You had a high chance of success.
You're going to be a millionaire,
right? This was true. This wasn't a belief. This was true. But as this greed and this pervasive strip mining sort of culture and this exploitative rebate revenue culture has started to grow and expand, what you have now is 2 years ago, for the first time, franchisees had a higher default rate on SBA loans than non-franchisees.
Really?
Which means you are more likely to go out of business buying into that intellectual property than you are creating your own business.
So
for the first time ever.
Which is insane. My brain's just trying to problem solve. And, you know, I don't know enough about this. I'm learning as we go. But, you know, I always support locally owned businesses. I love meeting the owners of the businesses. I'm entrepreneurial. I always have been. If I'm a part of working for my city, right? Is there a way that cities could create laws where we're going to offer small businesses better rental rates on the commercial space, things like this, so that, because it seems like a lot of times when you see these like pop-up cities, right, you have to keep building in the United States. We have, you know, a housing crisis, right? But when these new communities pop up, a lot of times it's like, oh, there's going to be the Baskin Robbins, there's going to be the Subway. It's always
so
the same
hear
thing.
Me out. That's actually a cartel as well through like KLRB and like these realtors that have they have agreements for Class A real estate with these private equity firms.
Got it.
And so they're guaranteed spots. But hear me out, because like, if you want to make a difference, you don't go to Class A real estate. You don't go. Class A real estate, if you don't know, it means there's a large anchor store with a long track record like Kohl's or Walmart or like...
They pop up those big brands, right?
And they create anchor stores that bring business to the parking lot, and it's very expensive and you're paying for Class A. If you want to save your communities, if you want... And here's the other thing. Like if you're giving money to a private equity owned business, it's leaving your community. All right. If you're giving money to a mom and pop, they're sponsoring a soccer team, right? They're donating to schools to give away things in raffles, right? They might be supporting a family with cancer down the street with buckets on their
counter. Well, they also live in this community.
So they live in the community.
But back to the city, can laws be implemented per city to favor small business?
Well, why would
this is happening.
Put that law into place?
So this is happening
so that
in some
areas.
So
they don't get bought up with a bunch
of
these big bots.
But the city is all
bought
out. She
just said it would go out of the city.
You've got to get out of Class A and go to Class B. Go to the smaller strip malls, right? In a lot of states, like if you look at Maryland right now, Maryland has a huge grant program for downtown redevelopment areas. And they don't want any big names.
So
they want mom and pops. So you can get grants to redevelop old buildings in downtown as they're being gentrified back into functionality, right? Like you can go find grants for downtown redevelopment in lots of states in the United States and build a mom and pop. But yesterday I was on William Stern's podcast, and he's the founder of Cardiff, which is a place to circumvent and find funding for small businesses. It's hard to find funding for a small business if you don't have one of these like super efficient like lobbying group ownership places where they get you a fast track to, you know, American taxpayer money, which is what the SBA is becoming. It's kind of a money laundering scheme for these private equity firms.
What do you mean by that?
So when these franchises go under, when these franchisees go out of business because the private equity firms have streamlined them, the SBA loans they had are going to be paid for by the taxpayers, right? And during COVID especially, most franchisors forced their franchisees to take out EIDL loans. Even if we didn't want them, I was forced to take one, right? EIDL loans are emergency loans. There was a state of emergency. Well, guess what? Loans are not tracked for failure so the American public can see them, right? But when you get, and right now the IFA is bragging about reinstating the franchise fast track to loans at the SBA under this administration. They're implementing a brand new fast track to getting loans out of the SBA if you're a franchisee, because you're going to wash all that money and hand it over through rebates. It would be one thing if the money was going to make the small business a small business. It's not. It's going to pad the pockets of the franchisors through rebate revenue. Mm-hmm. If a franchisee could buy a sign from a local sign maker, they would get competitive rates. If they're getting it through their franchisor, they've hiked those rates up and they're getting a kickback for it. If a Subway franchisee could go and source their own meat slicer, a local distributor would try to give them a better deal. But we've eliminated competition because the prices are fixed.
So yeah, okay, so when you own a Subway, I'm trying to understand all this as well. It's like you have to buy from the vendor they sell.
Yes,
or you
and
don't
they've
meet
hiked
the
prices.
Clients.
They're not passing along the best deal to you. The same reason Rourke Capital got Subway and immediately told all the franchisees they had to renovate. They already make no money. They already have the highest default rate. Now they need to take out a loan, which they're going to get fast-tracked for. And then they need to renovate the building, which they're going to spend tons of money with these vendors to kick back to Rourke and get those dollars back to their investors right away for. But who's helping the small business owner that didn't need more debt from a new loan for a new overhaul that wasn't even priced at the best deal?
Now I think I'm starting to... Okay, so is this
it's
what...
It's a cartel. Potentially... Everything is cartel-like at this point, and we
is
have
that...
to break it up.
Like the Cracker Barrel whole thing, because we talked about that, the cultural stuff. But do you think behind the reasoning of making them want to change the logo and like update all the rest of the stores is not because they wanted a new brand image, it's just because this is a new way for them to get like more revenue or something?
What was the color of the decade last year? Millennial gray, right? There's been this, there's like actually a really common like new topic that's creeping up in a lot of podcasts about why everything has lost color and individuality. You look at cars in a parking lot, there's only like four colors.
Well, I mean,
you look at all the furniture and it's all some version of grayish or gray blue. Everything.
Are you kidding me? We're surrounded by it. You pick
right?
this wallpaper.
Every, and we can thank the, I'll thank Chip and Joanna Gaines for a lot of that too, right? But what that actually is that corporations make more money by offering less individual opportunity. Okay? You make more money when you make fewer colors.
Well, you see
and so
it in...
as things have been consolidated, all our choices have disappeared. We don't have different vendors fighting for us to create individual things we want. And they don't have to give us colors we want because they're the only place we can shop. And the same is true in franchising. The same is true in home. home building. The same is true in car making. The same, as we have consolidated these monopolies and these cartels, and we have failed to do what it is the responsibility of our regulators to do, which is protect capitalism if they want it to succeed by keeping guardrails on and holding control of the darker human inclination, the human behavior that is to acquire more and secure more wealth for yourself, your spawn, your offspring. That is our evolutionary inclination. Okay? I say this a lot. Capitalism is a math problem. It is an economic math problem. It is supposed to create as much economic output as possible with as few inputs of cost as possible. And at all times, without the check of regulators, capitalism is trying to get as close to slavery as it can. More economic output, fewer costs for the labor and the overhead. All right? It is the regulator's duty. It is our government's job to check the dark inclinations of humanity to collude, to engage in anti-competitive behavior, to engage in the kinds of behaviors that exploit their franchisees and eliminate the possibility for actual excellence. These same franchisors are also exploiting non-competes so you can never leave them. You can never go on and create. Oh. It used to be very common for people to be a franchisee for 10 years. You would learn everything you didn't like about that business and you'd go make something better. And then the franchisees, largely through the IFA, created new contracts. They spread through all franchising that made it. So now you're a hostage. You can't leave. You can't work anywhere when you go. And so you're stuck or you can't feed your family or they'll sue you.
So in like
which
California,
they're suing me for right now.
Like in California, for example, non-competes don't hold up in the court of law. So there are some
non-competes in employment don't hold up. In franchising, they're still holding up pretty well.
Okay, so there's the difference there.
Although there was a law that was going to Newsom's desk and he vetoed it.
He did.
So he vetoed
it. And for what reason?
He also shut down, you know, insurance covering women's hormone replacement therapy. So, but anyways.
I have so many thoughts about Gavin Newsom. Palisades.
Yeah.
Private equity funds he is invested in.
Yeah, no, I mean, the list could go on and
Nancy
on.
Nancy Pelosi's nephew.
Exactly.
I have so many thoughts.
But it sounds like for everybody out there that's listening, support small business.
Support small business.
You know,
and the shoes you're in right now, that changes everything.
And get involved in your local government, too, yes. and know what's going on. Because I really do believe in the good of people. And when people know better, they do better. And I think that, you know, your story is so important because a lot of people aren't in your shoes. Yeah. And so, and like you said, they're not allowed to talk about it on most circumstances. And so you're in a unique situation where you are, you're able to raise the awareness on this issue. And so it's going to allow moms to look at a contract a little bit more closely and protect their kids and maybe not, you know, start to get involved with a certain franchise or, you know, just look at things differently.
We need to bring back original ideas.
Yeah.
We need original ideas. If you think you have a good idea, don't buy a franchise. Go build it and grow it. Make your own idea successful because there's too much consolidation. People are desperate for new experiences. They don't want this monopolized environment we're living in. It's crushing to the human spirit. People are desperate for your good idea.
Well, and I think people are desperate for uniqueness. Like you were saying, all the colors are the same, you know, and then you have like all of the celebrity, you know, plastic surgery. Everybody's trying to look the same. But even though it's kind of been like a darker conversation in a lot of ways, I do have faith. And I believe that the pendulum does always swing back. And so hopefully we're here and we're starting to move back where people are getting this information and they're realizing, okay, this is more important than just, you know, I vote with my dollar. This is a bit much bigger and we really need to get back to the backbone of the United States, which is supporting small business. Sorry, it's off. But
you know, and I would say that, like, in the shoes you stand in right now, supporting small businesses, it's hard. You know, you're giving up convenience.
And you might pay more.
You might pay a little more, but that money's staying in your community.
Right.
For every dollar you send to a private equity-owned firm, 98 cents can leave your community. It's 92 to 98 cents is the average. But if you're spending that money at a local business, you're seeing 68 to 75 cents stay in your community.
And so it's in the city's best interest, maybe, to do what I was suggesting, like offering local owners, small businesses, cheaper rent or things like that. And do some cities have these types of ordinances and laws in place? Or
in a lot of the redevelopment areas there is, but no, there's not a lot of that right now.
And
there,
so get involved and change things.
Private equity and monopolies control most of the Chamber of Commerce at the national
level.
That's
what I'm saying. They could get paid these people off to
But not everybody's local corrupted, Chambers of Commerce still do good work. You know, but there are ways, and I truly believe we need to support one another. If you have a friend that wants to start a business and you believe in it, help them out.
100%.
Support them. Share everything about them. Invest with them, right? And go find places to secure funding and financing that don't sell your soul and the spirit of what you're trying to do. And always, always read the fine print and know that no corporation cares more about your child than you do. And chances are your child could be a cost of doing business.
100%.
Genuinely.
Because they don't even know what's going on. It's a spreadsheet.
They don't even know.
So what are you, I guess, looking forward 2026? Like, what
sounds like an app
are you working on? Yes.
I am working on building.
What can you tell us about what's cooking behind the scenes?
I'm absolutely working on trying to create opportunities for people to work together to support small businesses, to identify what is owned by private equity, what is owned by mega corporations, and what is actually still local and real. I'm going to need lots of help from all across the United States to source that data. It's not something that's easily available, and it's going to take all of us working together to build that data model. But I am
working.
Can
AI assist with this? Because this could be a good use of AI.
Sort of.
Right?
Because it's not easy to
tell
scrape.
It to sort of, find out this information.
We need people. We need humans. We need humans.
And I'm working on
scale,
hoping to partner with several people in referendum states to start passing laws to protect citizens in referendum states, to one, change the way that arbitration is happening, and to two, really start to protect from monopolies. I believe we can do regional antitrust rules that would start targeting regional monopolies instead of national monopolies.
So where can people find you and support your causes?
So they can find me at TiffanyCiancy.com. You can find me at TiffanyCiancy on TikTok and on YouTube. You can find me at The Vino Mom on Instagram and X. And also, the little girl that passed away at Urban Air this weekend, her name is Emma Riddle, and her family has a GoFundMe. And so if you guys want to go support a family that lost 100%. Their daughter at her big sister's birthday party, like, they need help, they need support. And they're being approached right now to go to arbitration. They are being told right now not to talk to the press. This is happening in real time, and they're going to need all the help they can get, because this company that they're about to be up against, I am sure, they've spent $10 million on me. I can't even imagine what they'll spend on them to keep them quiet.
Yeah. You know? We're one of those people. We're in California. We're in a referendum state. So maybe we're one of the people.
Let's do it.
Help.
Let's pass the laws. Let's make a difference.
100%.
I absolutely believe in this cause. Let's do it. Because I think that people don't realize they have the power to circumvent their legislature.
You do have the power.
And you do. 100%. In a lot of states, you do. And once you start those dominoes following, you see that when it starts to spread to between 6 and 8 states, it usually starts to have more support at the federal government because they realize it's coming for them regardless.
And then a lot of times when you go up in at these small states, then they'll fund the opposition and muddy the waters. You know, you see those ads like yes on prop, blah, blah, blah. And then you see the no on prop, and you have to figure out who's funding what.
Yes.
And so that's another slog that people should be aware of, that, you know, that there's dark money funding these ballot initiatives in the wrong direction too. When they're telling you to pass something that's actually, it sounds really good. They're like,
support small businesses. Yeah. The IFA backs us.
Yes,
we support 785,000 franchisees. No, you support the billionaires that exploit them.
Boom.
That's what you do, IFA. You support the billionaires that exploit them. And every politician that thinks that they represent small businesses are also listening to the billionaires that support them.
Yeah.
And support small business,
support
your
small
local
business.
Owners. Yes. There's nothing that feels better, and get to know them.
Yes.
You know, I love that. Well, thank you so much for being here. This has been amazing.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you, Tiffany, for coming on the show. And just for people out there, do not mess with Tiffany Ciancy. She's not the person you want to go after or up against. Let me just tell you that.
I mean, I love kids. I'm not going to let somebody hurt them if I can avoid it.
No, they're lucky to have you on their side. 100%.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.